Okay, we saw Bill back when he talked about the great ocean liner, the moment after rescue from shipwreck. And we talked then about the fact that he liked to use examples of something we already know to teach us something new. He does that all the way through the book. Another thing that he does, he repeats himself quite often. Most writers do that. But they nearly always find a different word when they repeat themselves, so it won't sound like the same thing over and over and over and over. They find a different word that means the same thing. There seems to be one key word running through this whole spiritual experience, and that's the word change, from what we were into something entirely different. Let's see how many times he said change on page 569 or 567, and how many different ways he had of saying it. In the first paragraph, he talked about a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. Our personality is made up by the way we think, by the way we feel, by our emotions, our old ideas, our old attitudes, and etc. So if we change our personality from restless, irritable, discontented into one who has peace of mind, serenity, and happiness, we've undergone a personality change. Paragraph 2, he again mentioned personality changes. But then he said, in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals, an upheaval is to change something entirely. In the third paragraph, first sentence, he called it sudden revolutionary changes. To revolutionize something is to change it entirely. Third paragraph, last sentence, he talked about an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness. To overwhelm something is to change it. Third paragraph, last sentence, he called it a vast change in feeling and outlook. In the fourth paragraph, first sentence, he said such transformations. To transform is to change. About the middle of the fourth paragraph, he called it a profound alteration. To alter is to change. So really what we're talking about here is simply changing the way we think, the way we feel, our attitudes and our ideas about life into something entirely different. Now, if it happens rapidly, we'll call it a spiritual experience. That's what Bill had. But most of us won't have that. Most of us will change as we learn. As we apply the program, we undergo that personality change over a longer period of time. We'll call it a spiritual awakening. But both of them, in either case, it's a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. When they came out with the second printing of the big book, he changed step 12 to read, having had a spiritual awakening. That's the only word that's ever been changed in the 12 steps from the time they first appeared in the big book Alcoholics Anonymous in 1939. He realized most people wouldn't have the spiritual experience, so he changed it to spiritual awakening. Now, I can buy into these ideas. When I first heard the term spiritual experience, that had religious connotations to me, and I didn't want any part of it. But I can buy into the idea of changing my personality, changing the way I think, changing the way I feel. Let's go back now to page 25.
When I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had become everything I detested in a human being, and I did not like me at all. And when they talk about change, that's when I said, man, I want to change. I didn't want to be me. So I looked around the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I found me some heroes and tried to emulate them. I want to be like them. They won't be like me. I want to be like them. Charlie was one of my heroes. And I tried to be just exactly like Charlie. I almost made it. It's a good thing I didn't, but I almost made it. Because I would have never become me. So, and I think we need our heroes for a time. And I think the type of change that you're talking about really is to change from what I had become to that which God intends for me to be. That's the type of change that I'm looking for today in Alcoholics Anonymous. But in the beginning, I had to emulate those other people, and I needed those other people in the fellowship. I tried to be like them, and they supported me. Back on page 25.
Last paragraph.
Said, if you're as seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there's no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we'd passed into the region in which there's no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives, and here they are. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could.
That's step one.
And the other, to accept spiritual help.
And that's step two.
And he said, this we did because we honestly wanted to and we're willing to make the effort. We can go out there and do the best we can do. We don't like this solution. or we can stay here and accept spiritual help. And every individual has to make their own decision about that. I can't make it for you. Nobody can. We have to make our own based upon the information and our own life's experience.
A lot of people in AA today will tell you, you better not talk too much about God or you'll run the newcomer off. But if you'll notice, the big book doesn't mind talking about God at all. And the big book finally gets around to telling us, we just got one or two choices. You know, we can continue to stay powerless over alcohol, continue to drink it until we die from alcoholism, or we can accept spiritual help. There seems to be no other alternatives for we alcoholics. My old sponsor straightened me up in this area. He said, Charlie, you don't need to worry about running a newcomer off talking about God. He said, if you do, whiskey will put him right back in here. He said he has no other place to go, and after he hurts some more and comes back, then he may be willing to talk about God. And I found that to be true in my case and in many other cases also.
You're going to run them off, but we've already been off.
Now, where did this idea of the vital spiritual experience come from? You know, you would think it came from somebody in religion. Well, if you start thinking about it, it always blows my mind to see where this thing really did come from. Let's look at this example on page 26. A certain American businessman had ability, good sense, and high character. This is a fellow named Roland Hazard. And Roland Hazard happened to be the one of them that stepped in between Eddie and the judge. Said for years he had floundered from one sanitarium to another. He had consulted the best-known American psychiatrist. Roland Hazard's family had plenty of money. He had gone to the best treatment centers and psychiatrists he could possibly find here in the United States, and nobody had helped him. Then he had gone to Europe, placing himself in the care of a celebrated physician, the psychiatrist Dr. Jung, who prescribed for him. Dr. Jung was one of the three leading psychiatrists in the world at that time. Now, he didn't go to Dr. Jung for a 28-day treatment program. He stayed with Dr. Jung for a year, and he was treated once a week by Dr. Jung for a full year. Though experience had made him skeptical, he finished his treatment with unusual confidence. His physical and mental condition were unusually good. Above all, he believed he'd acquired such a profound knowledge of the inner workings of his mind and its hidden springs that relapse was unthinkable. Nevertheless, he was drunk in a short time. More baffling still, he could give himself no satisfactory explanation for his fall. So he returned to this doctor, whom he admired, and asked him point blank why he could not recover. He wished above all things to regain self-control. He seemed quite rational and well-balanced with respect to other problems, yet he had no control whatever over alcohol. Why was this? He begged the doctor to tell him the whole truth, and he got it. In the doctor's judgment, he was utterly hopeless. He could never regain his position in society. He would have to place himself under lock and key or hire a bodyguard if he expected to live long. That was a great physician's opinion. But this man still lives and is a free man. He does not need a bodyguard, nor is he confined. He can go anywhere on this earth where there other free men may go without disaster, provided he remains willing to maintain a certain simple attitude. Some of our alcoholic readers may think they can do without spiritual help. Let us tell you the rest of the conversation our friend had with his doctor. The doctor said, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you. Our friend felt as though the gates of hell had closed on him with a clang. He said to the doctor, is there no exception? Yes, replied the doctor, there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences.